Well, in case you're wondering, Mandel's is the real deal. It's a real candle. So years ago, I bought some of these for some guy friends. So I think this video is kind of like a fraud, but there really are Mandel's. If you Google it and check it out, if you've been confused and you don't know what to get that guy in your life for their birthday or a special day in their life, now you have a new gift idea for them with Mandel's. So it's a real thing. And you're wondering, why did they just show that video? Because we're talking about men this morning. We're starting a series called Modern Family. And this has application for all of us, no matter what family we're from, no matter what kind of family we're a part of, because we're all part of different types of families, whether it's a family that we live with in a home, a family that we work with, a church family. There's different types of families. And we're talking about men this morning because I believe that if men would act like men, all those different families would be healthy. And so we're going to talk about men this morning. If you're like, oh no, this is Man Sunday. My daughter called it Man Sunday yesterday. And you're a female and you're like, oh, this is Man Sunday. It doesn't have any application to me. That's not true at all. You're not like listening to this teaching over in the corner somewhere. You have everything to do with manhood because you can encourage and help men to be the men that they're called to be. You can even learn this morning, what are the expectations that God has for men. And so if you're not treated or honored a certain way, you can be able to think and act in ways that say that's not okay. Because we want women to be loved, honored, and treated awesomely here at United Church. And so the best thing that you can do this morning, though, is if you're sitting next to or near a guy that you're close to, is don't elbow him at any part of the message, all right? And I'm being 100% serious about that. And what I'm also being serious about is don't ask your man or a man what he thought about the message for like a week or so. All right, so just like let it sit, let it settle a little bit. Give this message some time to settle. And so the reality is we live in an incredibly gender-confused culture. And we try to eliminate talk about being a man or being a woman. And we tiptoe around the differences between men and women. And the result can be there's not a lot of men of honor in our culture. You know, and there's a certain verse in the Bible that we're going to launch from this morning that when we miss the power of it, we de-genderize our world. And we want to make sure we bring some clear distinctions this morning to this topic. And so the verse is from 1 Corinthians chapter 16, verse 13 to 14. It says this, it says, be watchful, stand firm in the faith, act like men, be strong, let all that you do be done in love. It says act like men. The modern translation today might be something like act like a well-rounded individual or just be a nice adult. And those are good things. We want men to do those things. But we also want men to act like men, meaning not like an animal, not like a child, and not like a woman. There is a call to be a man. And we're not going to talk about stereotypical things about what does it mean to be a man. Do men drive pickup trucks or minivans? Or we're not going to talk about do men wear pink shirts or blue shirts. What I'm most interested in talking about this morning is what's the difference between a boy and a man? Because I think it's really easy to draw a line in the sand and say, this is a boy and this is a man. And it's also possible for there to be 15-year-olds here this morning that are men, as well as 40-year-olds that are boys because of the way they think and act. One of my closest friends growing up was an atheist. And at the age of 16, I think back about my friend Carrie. He was the most chivalrous, respectful man that I ever knew as a 16-year-old atheist. So this even has application for people that are following or not following Jesus this morning. And there's five marks that we're going to pull from this passage in 1 Corinthians, and we're going to pull them out with another character from the Bible named David. He was the second king of Israel, probably one of the greatest kings in the nation of Israel. And he took over from the first king because the first king was disqualified. So the first king, his name was Saul, and he disqualified himself. And so there was now a job search, or maybe a candidate search for a new king, and the way that the nation of Israel would find their new king was through a prophet. There would be a prophet, in this case it was named Samuel, and Samuel would hear from God, and he would hear from God about certain decisions for the nation, and one of those was who's going to be the next king. And so God would speak to him and tell him that the next king was going to be. So he put Saul in place, but now he needed to put a new king in place, and God said, go to the house of Jesse. And so Jesse had a dad with a bunch of sons, and so Samuel makes his way to this house where there's a man named Jesse. And he pulls up to Jesse's house, and you know, he says, "Hey, I want to meet your sons." And Jesse marches his sons into the room because the prophet has come, so there must be something important going on. And he brings his first son, who his name is Eliab. And his first son's kind of like, reminds me of Dwayne "The Rock" Johnson. I don't know if you know him. He's like a man's man, strong, you know, and tough and handsome and all these different things. And he's like, wow, Samuel thinks right away, this must be the man. You know, like, look at him. Like, he's a king. People are going to honor and respect this guy. But this is what God says, because God would speak with prophets to let them know yes or no. And so God says this to Samuel. He says, "Do not consider his appearance or his height, for I have rejected him. The Lord does not look at the things people look at. People look at the outward appearance, like The Rock. But the Lord looks at the heart." Not saying anything bad about The Rock's heart, but just saying in general, this principle applies to us today even as well. God is not as interested with what we look like, what kind of car we drive, what kind of clothing we wear, or how big our muscles are to define if we're a man or not. God looks into our hearts to define if we're a man. So what are some of the things that God says about our hearts? And that's what we're going to get at. But going back with this story, what happens is Jesse has seven sons that basically Samuel looks at each son, sizes them up, and every time God says no, 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 seven times. And he's like scratching his head. "God, did you really send me to Jesse's house? You're saying no to all his sons." And he's kind of like, "Hey, do you have another son by any chance?" And they're like, "Oh yeah, that son, that guy, he's out watching, you know, the sheep out in the field." And Samuel's kind of like frustrated, like, "Really? Go get him right now. In fact, don't sit down until he gets here." So he's a little frustrated with them. And so they run and they get David and they call him in. And as soon as David walks in, in that very moment, God speaks to Samuel, that's the next king. And he anoints him with oil and he becomes the king. Not on that very day. There's not the transition of being the king, but the Spirit of God rests on David from that day forward. And this is how Samuel describes David when he returns home. So he kind of returns home and starts to talk about David and tell others about him. And he says this. He says, "I've seen a son, a Jesse of Bethlehem, who knows how to play the lyre. He is a brave man and a warrior. He speaks well and is a fine-looking man. And the Lord is with him." David was a real well-rounded guy. You know, he played music and made money playing music. He wrote poetry and recited poetry. He was well-spoken. And he was a warrior. He was brave, a man of valor. You know, he would be like a great character for the next Nicholas Sparks novel, become movie, I think. So David is like this well-rounded guy. And we have this awesome description of him. And it's such a good description that King Saul hears about David. And he's like, "I want him to marry my daughter." Because eHarmony worked a little differently. Then you didn't post your profile and like pursue one another. You posted your profile and dads would like go hunt after you. And like, so Saul wanted David to marry his daughter. And David gets news that King Saul wants you to marry his daughter. And David's response was like, "I don't have a bride price," because in that day they would need to bring a bride price. Like, David's like, "I'm poor. I have nothing to give to him." And so Saul says, "Well, let's settle this." And he comes up with some option that works to his favor. He's able to test the real manhood of David, and he's also able to do some harm to his enemy. The enemy of Israel was the Philistines. And so he says, "Why don't you just go kill 100 Philistines for me, and we'll see, you know, you'll take out some of our enemy, and I'll see if you're really a brave warrior." I mean, one guy killing 100 Philistines, pretty tall order. But to prove that you killed them, what you need to do is then bring back their foreskins. Now, I don't know if you've ever used that word before in your your vocabulary, but I haven't. If you don't know what that word means, ask your parents when you get home. Do not Google it, but look it up in a dictionary. You know, and so like David's got to go out and kill these guys and get 100 foreskins. So he decides to go out and kill 200 guys and get 200 foreskins. He like cuts them off, stacks them up, carries them home. I mean, that's so weird. That is nuts. I mean, you just feel really awkward even me talking about it this morning. But that is what happens. It's in the Bible. That's probably why the Bible would be a rated R movie if it was turned into a movie. But David is incredibly brave. He's a warrior. He's an artist. He's well-spoken. He is a man's man. And his life illustrates these things we want to pull out from 1 Corinthians this morning. And the first is be watchful. See, this is what a man does. He takes responsibility and has a future vision. And boys passively live for today. So be watchful as a man takes responsibility and has a future vision. And boys passively live for today. See, a boy, he doesn't have plans for his future. He gets up and he's like, I just want to have fun today. I don't want it to be a hard day. Leave me alone. I'll leave you alone. I'm going to do whatever I feel like and the day will lead me. I'll play some video games, eat some snacks, play with friends, avoid chores and whatever else. Just don't tell me to do anything. That's what a boy thinks. A man says, I'm doing X, Y, and Z today because of what I need to do tomorrow or what I need to do next week or next month or next year. Or this vision that God has given me that I'm called to pursue, I need to do X, Y, and Z today in order to do that. Our culture has actually figured this out about men, that they want to accomplish something, that they have big dreams and ambitions, and some of those relate to different categories of life, but one of those is physically. Like, men want physical challenges in life. And so I don't know if you've ever heard of these grown-up obstacle courses called Mud Races or Tough Mudders, Spartan Race, Battle Frog. Anybody here ever done any of those races before? I have done them, so I'm not talking about this like in a negative way. Like, this is great. This is awesome. This is cool. It's totally good. I'm not making fun of Tough Mudders. But this is why they are so successful, because they've tapped in to this desire that men have for a bigger vision of their life. And check out this quote from the chief creative officer of Tough Mudder. He says, we really don't know if we're tough anymore. We don't have fist fights. We don't chop wood. Life has become convenient and easy. At Tough Mudder, we get a lot of what we call the fight club male. The 25, the 40-year-old guy in a white-collar job who hasn't been scared, hasn't been wet and muddy, and wants to test himself to see what he's made of. To prove that, even though he's 38 and has a roller bag and a door on his minivan that closes by itself, he still has this inner badass. It's the visceral sense of accomplishment that handing in the Q2 report doesn't give you. See, Tough Mudders figure this out. Like, there's a bigger purpose and vision that men want to live for. There's nothing wrong with it. It's a great thing. And why these things work so well is because they know how men are wired. See, I have two sons. One is 5 and the other is 10. They're boys. I don't expect them to be men at that age. But when my 5-year-old son, Toby, wakes up in the morning, he thinks about two things, fun and food. You know, let me find some food and let me have some fun. But I wake up in the morning and I don't think those two things. I think two other things. I think get ready and go. Because I have things to do. David had an unmistakable vision for his life where he had to get ready and go to be king. Now, it's a little unfair because, you know, he had a prophet that spoke to him that told him he was going to be king and anointed him as king. So that doesn't happen to anybody these days. But there is this sense of purpose that God does give to us. Sometimes somebody else can encourage us and speak that into our lives. But what we can do as men is we can think about that. We can pray about that. We can talk to other people about this bigger purpose or vision that God might have given us. And then we can continue to pray about it and make a decision to say, am I going to pursue that or not? And so a way that I've heard it phrased is, what is the hill that you're called to climb? You know, we ask that question. I think about that for our church. I think about that for my life. Like, what's the hill in front of me that I need to climb next? And so maybe it's a short-term hill in the next couple of months or years, or maybe it's a long-term goal that I have. And I think all men need to have a vision for their future. Maybe it's to start a business that employs other people. Or possibly it's just a vision to get a job and not rely on the government to pay your bills. Or maybe it's a vision to beat an addiction that you're struggling with, or to help other people beat their addictions if you've been able to beat it. Or maybe it's to marry an awesome woman and have lots of kids because you just want to invest in the next generation and see kids grow up and make a difference in their world. But at some point, men, we have to answer this question, what's the hill for us to climb? And women, you can help us answer that question as well. See, my wife and I, we pay attention to our boys and their skills and their gifts and their passions, and we want to see them develop them to have a future vision for their life. And even once they've identified that, we still have more work to do, and they have more work to do, and all of us have more work to do, because then we need to take responsibility for it. See, there's a lot of men that have vision. Like, I want to do A, B, and C. But they just think that it's going to happen to them. Like, if I just talk enough about it, then this will happen to me. Well, that's how boys think. Boys think that by chance or luck, that vision will come to fruition. But men take intentional steps. Men do something about it. Not only do they take intentional steps, but they also say no to certain things. They're able to say yes to the right things and no to wrong things, meaning this term delay gratification. The men are able to delay gratification of the moment and say, huge bowl of candy, bag of potato chips, six pack, I'm going to have it all right now. Boys do that, but men can say no to those things, because if boys can't grasp that, if they can't get a hold on delaying that type of gratification, they're going to have bigger problems in life when they grow up and make bigger decisions about what car to buy. And they buy a car that they want and feel like they should have in that moment, but it's a loan that's way too big to pay for. Or maybe it's a lifestyle that they want to have by dressing a certain way, eating out, vacationing, enjoying life in a certain lifestyle that their checking account cannot afford. And so when boys can't delay gratification, they grow up to be adult boys that make these decisions that train wreck their life. And the future vision that they have that they were hoping for can't happen because of these decisions that they couldn't delay gratification. See, boys need to learn to delay gratification in order to be a man. Men take responsibility. They say no to things and yes, no to the wrong things and yes to the right things in order to accomplish that future vision. So be watchful. The next thing men do, and we see in David's life, is to let all that you do, implying you do something, you work. A man provides by working and a boy plays by consuming. See, men, they think about, what do I need to do next? But boys wake up on that Saturday morning and say, how many TV shows can I watch or video games can I play? Please don't give me any chores. But a man is ready to work. And we see that with David. When we were first introduced to David, where was he again? When Jesse came to visit his house, he was outside working while his brothers were hanging out inside. He was taking care of the sheep. Remember, he played the harp. He got paid for doing that. And we see this in David's life over and over again, even as a young man, before he was old enough to be part of the military and part of the war and serving Israel in that way, we see him as a young person being a man, because he shows up to bring lunch to his brothers who are off to war. His dad tells him, hey, bring some food to your older brothers. His older brothers are part of the army. And he shows up to camp and he notices that all the warriors of Israel are hiding out in their tents. And they're talking about this guy named Goliath. And Goliath is this gigantic man who is intimidating them, insulting their God, and insulting them. And they're scared of him. They don't want to go to battle with Goliath. And David is thinking, like, what's wrong with you? Because David, already at a young age, is a man. And he's saying, you guys are boys. You're hiding out. You see, a boy never wants to take on a task that he doesn't think he can do. When we think about work, like, oh, that task is too big for me. That's how boys think. But men, like David, say, he's not going to insult the living God. He's not going to insult us. And David goes to King Saul and he says, I'm going to fight this battle. Like, this guy can't talk like this to us and to our God. And he says, put me to battle against him. And they kind of laugh at David. You're too young. There's no way. The armor doesn't even fit on you. And King Saul says this to David in that moment. He says, this is what David says to Saul, and Saul's because Saul's saying, you can't do this. And David says to Saul, your servant has been keeping his father's sheep. When a lion or bear came and carried off a sheep from the flock, I went after. So David's saying, like, hey, when a lion or bear came, I actually went after it. I struck it and I rescued the sheep from its mouth. And when it turned on me, I seized its hair, I struck it and killed it. Your servant has killed both the lion and the bear. And this uncircumcised Philistine will be like one of them, because he has defied the armies of the living God. And David's basically saying, I don't care if you think I'm too young. I'm going to battle. Like, this guy can't do this, because already there's qualities in him as a young person of manliness. There can be 15-year-old men and 40-year-old boys. And that's exactly what we see in this story. And David goes to battle. He takes this little slingshot that everybody's making fun of him for, but it's got the power of a .38 caliber gun. And he fires a rock at that speed, and it takes down this giant Goliath, and he wins that battle on that day. And he shows us what men do about work. They move forward even when things look too big to tackle. Men work. When I was a pastor in New Jersey, I did a small discipleship group that we called Man Up. It was just a small group of guys, and there were high school guys, and we would meet up. We would talk about book studies together. We would do different projects in the church together. And one of the things that I did with them was to watch Braveheart and Chop Wood. Like, those were two of my requirements for being a man. And so we watched Braveheart together, and then we would, because I had a wood-burning stove at my house, and so I would gather wood throughout the year, and so we had this huge pile of wood, and some of these guys never had swung an axe before, used a wood splitter before, and I said, we're going to go ahead, and we're going to split this pile of wood today, or do the best that we can. And I know that form of unpaid labor might sound illegal here in Maryland. I assure you, it was all good in New Jersey. But the lesson was, men work. We sweat. I know that's just one way that men can work. I'm not saying that men can't sit in a cubicle and work. You know, I sit in an office and work too. But men work. And when they get cut, they suck it up and they continue to work. They don't go home, put a Band-Aid on and say, this is too hard. You know, in this teaching environment, I wanted to instill a work ethic, because the environment we live in today, like, their books are selling like 4-hour work week for men. It's like, 4-hour work week? Are you kidding me? Like, or retirement. Like, let me retire and go collect seashells. Men think that's stupid. Like, we want to work. We find value in working and bringing worth to this world. My father is an example to me of this, because he retired years ago, but he didn't stop working. The next week, he was back at it, rehabbing homes. He uses his skills and his abilities to help his family, to help churches that he's served with, and to help his friends. And he has not stopped working. I'm not saying, like, hey, men always have to work until their last breath. You know, there's a moment that, you know, things just shut down for us in our minds, in our bodies, and they stop working. But until that day, men work. This is how we bring value to the world. And this is how we provide for the people that we love and care about. It's a mark, a clear mark of manliness in the Bible. And then the next mark is in this phrase, act like men. It doesn't say act like a man, it says men, plural. And it's helpful for us to know that a man works for the good of a team. The boys work for personal glory. You see, Jesus, he submitted himself to a team. He was part of a team, a band of brothers, and he led and functioned in a team. But boys, they want the glory. They want to be the MVP. If they don't like how the game's being played, they pick up their ball and they go home. That's what a boy does. But a man sticks it out, and he works with a team for the good of the team. David's worst failure, because we're not going to just learn about manhood from David's accomplishments, he also screwed up. He actually had a massive relapse as he was a king. And it was related to this concept of personal glory and teamwork. He gave up on his team. He said, I'm just going to bask in my glory for a moment. And this is what happened. It says in 2 Samuel in the spring, at the time when kings go off to war, David sent Joab out with the king's men and the whole Israelite army. They destroyed the Ammonites and besieged Rabbah, but David remained in Jerusalem. Now, that might not read like a massive relapse to you, but here's what the relapse is. Whose men were they that went out? It says it was David's men. That was his band of brothers. Where did they go? They went off to war. And it says in that phrase, it's when kings often go to war. David's greatest strength was to be a warrior, was to be a strategic leader. And he stopped living out his mission and vision. And because of that, what took place after he sent all of his buddies out and he was by himself was the biggest downward spiral we've seen in a king's life. We're not going to talk all about it, but he eyed up a woman who was his buddy's wife, and he slept with her and got her pregnant. Then he killed his buddy, and it just gets worse. Like, it just goes on and on. And the point isn't what happened. The point is that he didn't go to war where he was supposed to be. And because he was alone, and because he was a lone wolf without his wolf pack, he fell. See, when men are by themselves, they're not just a danger to themselves, they're a danger to other people. You know, right now, by the age of 21, boys will have played 10,000 hours worth of video games. Who knows how many hours on Netflix, YouTube channels, and so forth. The average male views pornography 15 hours a week. And by default, he is taught that sex is a solo sport and have unrealistic expectations for a woman, and to view a woman as an object of his desire rather than someone created in the image of God to be honored and respected. When men are by themselves, they're a danger, not only to themselves, but to other people. And I'm not talking about being an introvert or extrovert. I'm talking about completely isolating yourself from people. Men, we need to run with a pack. I'm excited for the list of groups that are on the floor and on that in that car this morning, because there's groups that represent our desire here at United for us to connect and have relationships with other people. It doesn't mean that you have to connect here at United. Maybe you have friends in other places, in other parts of the country or our community, and that's great. We're not advocating it has to be here, but we're offering a way for you to develop relationships with other men. There's one called Fire Pit. It's just for men to hang out and get to know each other and build some relationships. In the fall, we've got some more studies that are specific to manhood coming up. But we need to connect with other men. There's a famous verse in the Bible from the book of Proverbs that says, as iron sharpens iron, so one man sharpens another. The effect, that impact that men have when they're around each other and they're encouraging each other in this way is they become a stronger weapon. But a certain kind of weapon, because the next point talks about the things that we do as men are to be done in love. So what is done in love? What kind of weapon should we be? See, a man uses his strength unselfishly to protect. A weapon to protect, and a boy is a predator who preys selfishly on others. See, the definition of love is to put somebody else's interest before your own, and men do this in how they choose to use their strength. See, we just saw David actually fail in this way. He used his strength as a king, as well as physical strength, to be a predator and prey upon Bathsheba. And so we have to look to another example. One of Jesus' followers, his name is Peter, and he talks about how men are supposed to honor and protect women by saying this specifically about a marriage context, but it applies across the board. It says, in the same way, you husbands must give honor to your wives. Treat your wife with understanding as you live together. She may be weaker than you are, but she is your equal partner in God's gift of new life. Treat her as you should, so your prayers will not be hindered. See, what Peter's talking about here is he's talking about the equality between men and women, but the reality of that equality is there's still an inequality in terms of strength, meaning I can pick up a heavier box than my wife. Now, I know I'm treading on thin ice because maybe some of you ladies could take me right now. So I'm not categorically saying that men are stronger than women. I am generally saying that is true. And I think you would probably agree with me. But what Peter is teaching here is use that strength in a certain way. Use it to protect. Use it to protect women and to bring honor to them. See, boys don't do that. They dishonor women. They abuse women. That's why there's a whole Me Too movement right now in our world. Because men have completely fallen short of this. Because they're not men, they're boys. There's probably young women here today that feel complete shame in their life because of a man, or I should say, because of a boy. Because of what a boy has done to you in your life. And right now you hang your head low because of the physical or verbal abuse that you have experienced. And that's just not what we're going to tolerate here at United Church. It's not what God tolerates. God calls men to live to a higher standard. It's to use their strength to honor women and to protect them. And some of the opinions that I might have associated to this belief might be unpopular, but I believe they honor God. And so men that are not married to a specific woman should protect her reputation by not sleeping with her. It gives her fewer memories of being with you and not comparing you herself with another husband that she's supposed to be married to, and not having to figure out that comparison game. You could protect your wife and your future wife from that. You could show the woman that you want to be with that you can delay gratification, because if you can't, they might be questioning, is he going to be faithful to me? So it's not a popular opinion these days, and I get it. But that's one of the ways that men can protect and honor women. There's a lot of dads here. Maybe you have daughters. I have three daughters. And from 15 years ago, rewinding the clock and seeing that I had and realizing the news of a daughter, I thought it was God's curse on me because I was once a boy. And I know how boys treat women and think about women. And I said, I can't allow that for my daughters. And so for dads that have daughters here, how are you protecting your girls? See, my daughters became involved and introduced to romance at a really young age because I was a pastor at a church. We were doing premarital counseling, and we had all these couples over our house, and our kids were hearing about this person's story and this person's story. And so, like, from the minute they could walk and talk, we started talking about relationships. And we started telling them about this thing called dating, where there's a 16 or 17-year-old boy that might drive up in our driveway one day, and he's going to come to the door, and he's going to want to take you out, and then he's going to take you out for a couple hours and then bring you back. And that's called dating. And you're not going to do that. So that's kind of like how we just dealt with it. Like, that's it. Conversation over. All right? Great. Well, they're growing up, and they're kind of saying, like, all right, great. Really, Dad? And so what does a dad do? You know, like, think about it. Think if somebody came up to your front door, knocked on the door, and said, hey, can I just take your car out for a spin? Like, even if I don't even have a nice car, and I would be like, no way. A 16-year-old boy is going to do that. But if he wants to take my daughter out for a spin, sure, go for it. That just doesn't make any sense to me at all. So I have this plan, and you can hold me accountable to this plan if it's going to work or not, if I actually do it. For that moment, if it ever does happen, I think it will. My girls are beautiful. And that the boy knocks on the door, and he says, I'm ready to take so-and-so out. And I'm going to say, all right, well, I'll come with you, and I'll sit in the passenger seat, and I'll see how you drive. I'll have you pay for my meal to see if you have any money. And then we're going to have a little conversation about protecting my daughter's reputation. And so I don't know if that's actually going to happen or not, but you can call me crazy and you can call me old-fashioned for even having those types of thoughts. And I really don't care. Because men need to protect women. Fathers need to protect daughters, and you don't have to protect daughters like that or with crazy guy thinking like that. But you got to protect them somehow. You got to protect your friends that are girls in some way, your mom, your sister. Like, men, that's what we're called to do. It's just really clear all throughout the Bible, and I'm only choosing a couple verses. And as much as it might seem weird, I think deep down, you want to see this. Deep down, our world longs for men to actually do this in life. But right now, it's just really cynical of it. And so we have to prove them wrong. And we have to show that there are men of integrity, and there are men of honor that still exist in this world. And it brings us to the last value, that if we are doing these values, we stand firm in them. And what I mean by stand firm is men thoughtfully choose an unpopular position and boys impulsively follow the crowd. See, boys aren't comfortable like being unpopular. Like, they just want to go with the crowd and go with the flow. They don't want to do something different, or maybe that would be weird. But men are okay with that. Because men are okay with pursuing what God has for me and saying, that's enough. And sometimes when we aim for what God has for us and to honor God and to live out the ways that God has for us, it's viewed as weird. Don't aim for weird. You'll be weird. Aim for God. And then just sometimes you'll be weird. When I was in college, I was a part of a fraternity. My first semester in the fraternity, they did these things called brotherhood development. I don't know if anybody is here part of a fraternity or sorority, sisterhood development, brotherhood development. And it was activities that were to encourage just deeper friendship and so forth in the fraternity. And so the brotherhood development director came to me and said, hey, Tim, we're tossing around this idea of a next brotherhood development thing, but we wanted to run it by you because you follow Jesus and we're not sure this is going to be cool with you or not. We want to go to a strip club. And I said, you know what, like, if you guys want to go to a strip club, like, don't let me hold you back, but that's just not my thing. I'm not really interested in viewing women in that way. And he's like, well, what if we could, we really want you to come. Like, what if you just like came and didn't look and just like, and just talk to us? I was like, really, dude? Like, I am a man, you know, like, and I was like, I just don't think that's going to work. And so I didn't go on that brotherhood development event. But you know, I remember, fast forward a year later, another conversation with this buddy. At this point in time, he was just a close friend. And I was in a relationship with Maria, who's my wife now. And he was saying, hey, man, like, you know the whole Christian abstinence thing? Is that like something that you guys are doing? And I said, yeah, it is something that we're pursuing that we want to wait for. And he's like, really? Like, how does that work? And I started to, like, he just started peppering me with questions. And as he peppered me with questions, it just became obvious, like, I was like an alien to him in that moment. And we're still friends, but, you know, we're different and different our perspectives on this so forth. And I'm not judging here, but like, we were just different. And I remember being weird to him. Because when we pursue God's standards and want to honor God, we're weird. We're unpopular. And we don't impulsively follow the crowd. You know, it might be weird to think about sexual standards like this and to think of it another way in David's life, in a moment where it was a totally different situation. There was a time where his father-in-law, so he married Saul's daughter, and Saul became his father-in-law. And Saul is pursuing David, not because he wants to hang out with him, but he wants to kill him. Saul was kind of like going crazy a little bit, and he's bringing 3,000 men to kill his son-in-law. And they're on the hunt for him, and in this moment, David and his buddies are kind of like hiding out in this cave. And Saul pulls up and takes a little bathroom break, and he happens to take a bathroom break right where David and his buddies are at. Like, he literally pops a squat a couple feet from David. All right, and so in that moment, David's buddy's like, kill him now, take his life. Like, he's after you. He wants to kill you. End this charade. Kill him. And David says to his buddies this phrase right here, I will not lay a hand on my Lord because he is the Lord's anointed. See, David didn't care about what was easy or convenient or about what his friends' opinions were. He was a man of integrity. He was a man of honor. He's like, I am not going to kill the king. And he was not popular with his friends. And he did what was right in God's eyes. Man, this is the place we need to get to where we make decisions like this that are right in God's eyes but might be weird in the eyes of other people. You know, in the short term, it might be weird, but in the long term, yours will be the life that people look to. Yours will be the life of great things. When we're willing to look foolish in the eyes of the world, we're embraced by God. I've said a lot this morning about manhood and this topic. It's longer than I normally speak here at United, but there's so much more that I would love to say. We've really just scratched the surface. But ladies, I want to encourage you to help us be this kind of man, to be the kind of man that uses your words to inspire us and push us forward, whether we're following God or not following God, to encourage us to pursue this type of manhood. Not to crush us and demoralize us, and don't give up on us if you feel like we're not changing fast enough. And guys, let's do this together. Let's pursue a fuller picture of being a man. Maybe it's an apology that you need to make to a woman in your life for how you've brought hurt and brokenness. Maybe you need to take a break from the video games or the other things that suck your time away from pursuing a bigger vision for your life. Maybe you need to stop isolating yourself from other men and just take the risk of jumping in. Maybe it's a group here at United or calling up an old friend and just reconnecting so that you're not alone. Maybe you feel like I'm doing pretty good in this and you should be encouraged this morning. That's great. But there's other boys that need your help this morning. So who are the boys that you see that just need a man to come alongside of them and to speak truth into their life and to help them pursue manhood? See, whatever it is, let's put the ways of boys behind us and pursue being a man. There are new things and really good things for us. As we talk about this topic of man, and I'm excited to talk about women and honor women next week, but this week, and it starts with men, because if men pursue this, I do think the other things will fall into place. And I just want to close and pray for the men this morning as we wrap up together. Let's only pray.